Hello, this is Dr. David Friedman, host of To Your Good Health Radio. As we age, our body faces challenges, creaky joints, muscle loss, and increased risks for various diseases. But what if I told you that getting older doesn't mean you have to feel older? Dr. Ian Smith, New York Times bestselling author of Eat Your Age, joins us to reveal how we can defy the effects of aging through simple, targeted changes tailored to each decade of our lives. You're going to learn how we can maximize our time from our 30s through our 60s and beyond by making smarter food choices, tracking essential health markers, and adopting lifestyle habits that enhance our well-being. It's never too late to take charge of your health, and stay tuned for this enlightening conversation because it's really going to change the way you age. Don't go anywhere. It all starts now.
It's To Your Good Health Radio with number one best-selling author and renowned wellness expert, Dr. David Friedman, changing lives just for the health of it.
Our next guest's extensive education background includes Harvard College, Columbia University, and the University of Chicago Pritzker School of Medicine. He is a number one New York Times bestselling author. He's the former co-host of the Emmy Award-winning syndicated talk show, The Doctors, and the medical diet expert for VH1's highly rated Celebrity Fit Club. He's also served as a medical contributor to The Rachel Ray Show and correspondent for NBC News. In addition, he's appeared on numerous shows, including The Oprah Winfrey Show, Anderson Cooper, and Dr. Oz. He's a sought-after speaker, and his long list of recognition includes honors from the National Academy of Television Arts and Sciences. And his latest book is called Eat Your Age, Feel Younger, Be Happier, Live Longer. Welcome to the show, Dr. Ian K. Smith.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm glad to join you.
Oh, it's wonderful to have you join us. Throughout the years, I've interviewed authors who shared eating for your blood type and your body type and even choosing our foods based on the four seasons. While some of those diet plans kind of felt like a stretch to me, I got to say that the concept of eating for your age really resonates. I mean, our nutritional needs change at different stages of life when we're prone to certain diseases. Start by sharing what inspired you to develop this intriguing eating plan.
Yeah, I've always wanted to create a program that looked at how nutrition can play a role specifically in the aging process. I've always believed that food is thy medicine. And I just figured that there had to be some science that would support that how we eat not only needs to change as we age, but also can benefit us in different ways as we age. And so to me, it was just kind of putting everything together. The idea that we expect to see different diseases and health conditions at different decades of our life. And if we're expecting based on historical data, what may be coming down the road, can we change how we eat and how we move to either prevent or lessen the severity of the impact of these conditions? So Eat Your Age really is a compilation of not just looking at the food that you should be eating for each decade of your life, but also looking at how you should change your exercises and how you should move and what kind of test you need to take for each decade that may deal with conditions that peak at a particular decade. So starting your 30s, go into your 60s plus.
Yeah, great. Now share why our nutritional needs should be changed as we age and maybe some examples of what the key dietary adjustments people should make at different stages of their life should be.
Yeah, I'll just give a few of them off the top of my head. For example, bone density is extremely important as we age. As we age, our bone density diminishes, and that's problematic because it can lead to several things, including fractures. And fractures as you get older can lead to problems, not just in the ability to walk, but also lead to emboli, fat emboli, blood clots, all different types of problems. In fact, fractures and hip fractures in particular can be extremely deadly for people of a certain age. So when you talk about diminishing bone density as we age, calcium is extremely important for our bones starting in our 30s. So someone in your 30s, they really need to pile on the calcium in proper amounts. But then as we get older, we also need more vitamin D. Vitamin D is also important for our bones. And so in the book, what I do in chapter 3 is I tell you for each decade of your life, what are your top 10 power nutrients? And then I tell you, what some of the food sources are for these nutrients. When I think about people who are in their 40s, I think about antioxidants, because in your 40s, most people talk about a dip in their energy levels. Work becomes very busy for people in their 40s. Home life, social life become very busy. And so your energy levels tend to dip. Eating the right foods in your 40s as it relates to your energy is really important. And antioxidants, which are disease fighters, they fight these things called free radicals. These free radicals are byproducts of metabolism that unfortunately can damage our cells. Well, antioxidants fight against these free radicals. And so eating foods that are high in antioxidants, particularly in your 40s, is very important. Then you talk about your 50s. I'll highlight monounsaturated fats, MUFAs. And the reason why these are important is because they're not only heart protective, but what they do is they raise the level of your good cholesterol, which is the HDL, and they lower the levels of LDL, which is the bad cholesterol. Then when you start talking about people getting into their 60s plus, protein is important. We can't emphasize enough how much we need protein. Most people in their 60s plus are not getting anywhere near the amount of protein they need to either maintain muscle mass or even build muscle mass. The typical formula that I like to use is people should be consuming between 0.7 to 1 grams of protein per pound. So if you're 100 pounds, you should be eating between 70 and 100 grams of protein on a daily basis. So those are just a few of the nutrients that I talk about in different decades and what they can do and where you can get these, the food sources for these nutrients.
That's great. I'm sure there's a lot of people saying, oh, it sounds great, but it's too late for me. I let myself go. I'm curious, do you believe there's a point of no return, or can individuals at any age improve their health by adopting healthier eating habits?
Yes, I believe the point of no return is when you're in a casket.
Of course you do, of course.
And that's it. No, I firmly believe that at any age, you can make changes. And more studies, by the way, are showing time and time again, there's a new field of study that's gotten a lot of attention called epigenetics. And that is where basically, even though your genes are programming you for a certain type of outcome, that your behavioral choices, your lifestyle choices, and your environment can actually supersede those genes. And so, no, I believe firmly that it's never too late to make change. And the body is amazingly resilient. The body is able to grow even as you get older and change. Your mind can adapt. You form new neurological and neuronal pathways in your mind for learning. So no, the idea that you're too old to make changes, too old to grow, too old to learn is absolutely false.
Great. What about a person's metabolism? Does that come into play? Like someone in their 30s can scarf down an entire pizza with no weight gain. But boy, when they're in their 50s, just about two or three slices seems to pack on the pounds. Does portion control become more important as we age?
Well, you know, it's interesting. In my previous book called The Met Flex Diet, which is based on metabolic flexibility, I did a lot of research on that book and discovered a lot of new things about metabolism that we just didn't know before. We always thought metabolism, by the way, started to slow down in your 30s. And it's just not true, actually. Metabolism really starts slowing down in your 50s. So it doesn't start in your 30s. And the amount of slowdown of the metabolism is not as drastic as we once thought it was. So we'd always say, this person has gained weight because their metabolism is just non-existent. And it's just not really true. What we've learned, however, is that people can actually impact their metabolism. Portion control, eating smaller meals, eating more meals. Also, when you eat, things like intermittent fasting can affect your metabolism. Different types of foods can affect your metabolism. And of course, the biggest boost to metabolism is exercise. And not just any type of exercise. It's about exercising in a strategic way so that you increase your metabolic burn. And so doing things like HIIT, H-I-I-T, which is high intensity interval training, is a great, great way to boost your metabolism. Also, by the way, doing things like fasted workouts. That is not having anything to eat an hour before you work out and eating nothing an hour after your workout. Thus, the term fasted workout is another way to boost your metabolism. So their metabolism slows, yes, as we age, but we should not resign ourselves to the idea that we're going to have really, really slow metabolisms. There are things we can do about it.
Yeah, great. What about the one thing I hear so much from people over 40 or in their 50s? They suffer from insomnia at night and a lack of energy in the day. And of course, they say, man, I wish I was in my 20s and 30s again. What should they be doing differently in that decade or those decades of life to help this?
Yeah, you know, sleep is a big problem for people as we age. Our biological clock kind of gets off kilter. Our hormones like melatonin, which is the sleep hormone, for some people that becomes disrupted. And so these kind of rhythms, diurnal rhythms that we have in our body that kind of ties our body into basically the sun rising and falling, they get thrown off as we age. One of the biggest culprits that we have found or that they have found in sleep research really is sleep environment. People have very bad sleep hygiene. For example, people are eating too close by the time that they're going to sleep. So they're eating their meal and 30 or 40 minutes later, they're lying in bed. Number two, people are using electronics right before they go to sleep, whether it's the phone or watching TV. And what research has shown is that even though you're closing your eyes, that the electronic use has stimulated your brain and your brain is still highly active as you're trying to fall asleep. And so you're not getting that nice restful sleep that you hope. Also, by the way, people's sleep environment. Sometimes the rooms are too cold. The rooms are too hot. The beds are not right. I mean, these seem like small things, but really people don't pay attention to the environment that they create when they go to sleep. And we notice that as people age, these environmental cues are largely ignored, but changes in them can lead to more peaceful sleep.
Yeah, good point. You brought up that the electronics, and I learned about blue light can keep you awake. And I was at a hotel, and it was like 1, 2, 3 in the morning. I can't sleep. I go, why can't I sleep? I looked up, the little fire detector had a little blue light on it. I go, could that tiny blue light be keeping me up? And I went and got a sticky note, jumped up and put it over it, fell right to sleep, Doc. That little blue light kept me up.
Yeah, it really, the blue light and the ambient light, really a lot of research has been done about that and how that keeps your brainwave activity really active while you're trying to go to sleep and thus keeping you up. And unfortunately for some people, because your rhythms may be off, if you're staying up too late, it throws you off. People experience insomnia. I mean, it really becomes kind of a cascading effect.
Yeah, so true. Especially you might have a little blue dot on your cell phone charger or maybe on your TV. Check that out. Because boy, I tell you, a little light got me. I'm like, wow, it's something so tiny, it could destroy my life. Let me ask this. You also have a companion recipe book that goes along with the main book. Tell us more about that.
Yeah. So I developed the Eat Your Age official recipe book because so many people, when they've tried my programs, have said, listen, can you just give me some simple recipes? So I wanted recipes that I called TASH, T-A-S-H, tasty, affordable, simple, healthy recipes. And so the Eat Your Age official recipe book does that. They're very easy, very simple. They're very healthy, very affordable. And by the way, the beauty of these recipes is that not only are they easy to make, but your entire family can enjoy it. Sometimes when you go on a plan, you end up fixing foods for yourself and then having to fix foods, different foods for the rest of the family. These are foods that everyone from children to adults can enjoy. They're not diet foods. They're just healthier recipes, but they're still extremely tasty and attractive.
Yeah, I know in this hustle and bustle, hectic life, convenience and cost takes priority. And that makes so many people die for those fast food that's so enticing than shopping and spending time cooking. Share how eating at home, like a home-cooked meal, is a better option and can even be more cost-effective. People don't realize it can be cheaper.
Well, for me personally, I have to be honest with you. I mean, my family, they always say to me, what do you want for Father's Day dinner or your birthday dinner? My choice is always eating at home, always. My family knows I would like to eat at home 10 times more than going out to a fancy restaurant. One, it's a more relaxing environment. You can enjoy your food. You can have nice conversation. You're not rushed. You can take your time. Also, by the way, It's just the control of the ingredients. Yes, I know you go to a restaurant, you order on a menu. You don't know how much butter or cream or salt or whatever it is that they're putting into your food. But when you're cooking at home, it's so much more controlled. And of course, the affordability. I mean, I don't know what has happened over the last couple of years, but prices have gone through the roof. I mean, it's unseemly. I was at a restaurant the other day and they wanted to charge $48 for a piece of a 6-ounce salmon that you can buy in the grocery store for $9. So I think that eating at home is a real big boon for people. The other thing I like to do, by the way, is I like to overcook when I'm cooking at home. And what I mean by that is I prepare more than I'm going to eat at that particular meal. And then I save it for leftovers. I'm a big leftovers guy. And so I have all these containers. I take the extras, put them in containers. And now I can eat in a healthy, controlled way the rest of the week. I can get some pasta and chicken if I want. My son made a cheddar broccoli soup the other night. That's in a mason jar in the refrigerator. I think people don't take advantage enough of being able to cook leftovers, to cook enough for leftovers and then eating them in the future.
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought that up because I do a lot of meal prep and it often takes, I'm busy. I'm super busy. I mean, I do everything, but I take one day of the week and I make one recipe and I divvy it up into joyful meals throughout the week. And this saves me time and money. And you know what? Now I could do my work while I'm eating my leftovers at work. So in other words, I don't have to go out and find something to eat. So that's great. I'm interested in your perspective on various diets out there. I was curious about, you know, the decades of life. You got Mediterranean diet considered the healthiest, including fish. But on the other hand, plant-based advocates argue, no, stay away from fish and animal foods. They're not good for you. And now carnivore diet claims all plant foods are harmful. All of them. We should just be eating meat. And it can get confusing. What are your thoughts on the best diet to follow?
You're so right. It's very confusing to the layperson. And my belief, my underlying belief is that anything asking you for extremism is not good, right? So everything in moderation. So I personally still eat meat, but I eat about 10% of the meat I used to eat because I wrote a book a few years ago called Plant Power. And when I was researching Plant Power, I learned so much that I didn't know about red meat, not just its effect as far as increasing your cancer risk, what it does to your gastrointestinal system, but also what it does to the environment. And so I drastically reduced my meat eating. But yes, having a little bit of meat, I don't think is too harmful. I eat a more plant-based diet. Do you need to be a vegetarian or a vegan to be healthy? I do not believe that. I think fish is awesome. I think chicken is a great source of lean protein. And so I think really it's a combinatorial effect. I think largely eating fish and chicken, occasionally maybe having a serving of red meat, avoiding fried foods as much as possible, eating as much color. I think a simple kind of diet that encompasses those general principles, you're going to find to be extremely rewarding and giving you great benefits.
Yeah, well said. You sound like you follow what I do. It's a flexitarian diet. It's 80-20, 80 plants, 20% some meat. So that's awesome. Yeah. I was vegan for 8 years and boy, I just felt different when I added a little bit of meat back. So yeah, I'm right on page with you there. What about dietary supplements? I would imagine these change depending on our age as well.
Yeah, it's interesting. Dietary supplements are kind of a mixed bag. It's a largely unregulated industry. The FDA does not regulate dietary supplements, never have. It's been something I thought was problematic for many, many years. I've talked about this. The FDA will regulate prescription medications, but they don't regulate supplements, even though supplements can have just as much of an effect of our health as a prescription medication. So I think that that's a misstep as far as governmental not supervising these supplements. And the reason why I say that is because these supplements really are kind of like the wild, wild west. By that, I mean, there's no supervising body saying that the ingredients that they use are correct, that the methods that they use to produce them are safe, that the claims that they're making of what they do for your health and your body, no one necessarily has to back that up with scientific information. So supplements are fine, but you really have to be a very discerning consumer of supplements. Where you get the supplement from, what you're using the supplement for, the credibility of the ingredients and those who are making claims about the ingredients. And here's the last point I want to make. If you are taking supplements, always talk to your healthcare provider because supplements have really impactful benefits to your health, and they can actually conflict or interact with medications that you're taking. Let's say, for example, you have high blood pressure and you're taking high blood pressure to lower your medication, but then you take a supplement that also lowers your blood pressure. Taking two of them together can make your blood pressure too low. So you really need to be careful of taking supplements.
Yeah, I love that you said the Wild Wild West, because it's so true. I wrote that in my book as well, that supplements, they're not regulated. And there was a company in Florida that was selling echinacea, which is an herb for immune boosting, especially if you have allergies. And guess what they were using in there? No echinacea. They were using hay. Well, a person that was taking it was allergic to hay.
Oh, wow.
So he's taking these supplements of what he's allergic to, thinking he's getting echinacea. So it really is. It's tough. And you've got to really look for certifications, good, reputable companies, because you're right. It's a, they don't come in and say, show me what's in that capsule. It is, like you said, the Wild Wild West. It's, you don't know what you're getting. So that's good that you brought that up. Talking to us about gut issues. It's become an epidemic. And I read that irritable bowel syndrome has increased tenfold over the last two decades. What do you think about so many people having such digestive turmoil? Do you think it's more diet related, or does stress and environment factors come into play? Especially people over 50. I've been seeing so many of that.
Yeah. First of all, when you find a huge increase in a particular disease or health condition, the first thing that always comes to my mind is not whether or not that's really happening, that there's this huge bump, but whether or not the reason why we're getting this bump is because we have greater diagnostic ability, meaning that there were a lot of people who were suffering from for this condition for a long time before. We just didn't have the great means to diagnose it, or people were not as forthright coming forward and talking about the condition. So whenever you see a huge jump and something like that, you got to think about that. Now, that being said, let's say you take that into account and there really is a significant rise in gut-related issues. Then you have to talk about food and environment. And I do believe that, and people underestimate the impact that the environment can have on our gut. They also underestimate the import and the importance and impact of stress on our gut. So there's this big body of research and this growing field that is looking at the gut-brain axis. That is, how is our gut health? How are things that we're eating? How is our microbiome, which are the bugs, let's say, for lack of a more technical term, the bugs that normally live in our gut? How does that impact the rest of our body, our brain, our mood, our satiety? We're finding that there is a huge kind of web of consequences related to our gut. So they're still researching it heavily. But what it's told us is that, yes, we are seeing an increase. I think a lot of it has to do with, by the way, a lack of fiber intake. Americans in particular, most Americans are consuming only about 30% of the amount of fiber that they should be consuming on a daily basis. And by the way, as we age, we do know that our gastrointestinal system slows down. The ability to absorb important nutrients like vitamin B12, that diminishes. So we not only do we have aging, which normally affects the gut, then we have other stressors, other influences like the environment, what we're eating, our microbiome, that can affect the gut also.
Yeah, and you talked about gut bugs. I know in your book, you have a huge section on the health benefits of probiotics. Do you recommend eating fermented foods, or do most people, you know, at certain ages need that supplement for probiotic?
Yeah, my general rule of thumb is if you can get it through natural foods, 9 times out of 10, that's the best way to get the nutrient, because the nutrient you're looking for is more bioavailable, which means it's more available to your body to be used. Just because you dump something into a supplement, it may be in a form that your body's not able to break it down and use it and metabolize it well. So just because it says it has vitamin X in the supplement doesn't mean that all of that vitamin X in that supplement is able to be used by your body. So food, typically in most cases, not all cases, but in most cases, foods are typically the best way to get these different nutrients. I believe that probiotics are awesome. I think as you age, probiotics or fermented foods should be consumed to help keep you regular, to help keep your gut moving, and to help keep your microbiome in proper balance.
Yeah, so true. What about coffee? I know, have you found as we get older, it's tougher for us to process caffeine? I know a lot of older people have a harder time. They say, boy, coffee affects me now, but it used to not. What's your views on the JABA?
Well, I think that what happens is as we age, our sensitivities to different nutrients, to different allergens. There are people who develop allergies in their 60s to food and to environmental allergens that they didn't have earlier. That's just how the body works. The body is constantly changing, constantly evolving. And so there are people who big coffee drinkers for most of their life, and then all of a sudden the coffee starts affecting their gastrointestinal system differently, which is why you have to be in tune to your body. People have to expect and be on the lookout as to whether or not they are reacting differently to foods and to environmental conditions than they did years ago. And I think that people need to get out of the idea that, well, I was never allergic to shellfish, so I'm never going to be allergic to shellfish. So if I'm seeing a reaction, it can't be the shellfish. That's not true. People develop new allergies all the time, and so people need to be sensitive to that.
Yeah, very true. What about wine? Once touted as being heart healthy, now I interview these experts that say, oh, it's bad, even in moderation. Where do you stand on having a cup of vino for dinner?
This is one of those areas where the research just keeps going back and forth.
Yeah.
The interpretation of the research keeps going back and forth. In these kind of situations, I try to just use common sense. Listen, a glass of red wine a night, I don't think is going to be bad for you. I think it contains resveratrol, which is a very powerful antioxidant. I think when you're consuming 2 and 3 glasses on a daily basis of not just wine, but hard alcohol, then that becomes problematic. I think the bigger message recently about alcohol consumption is that what we thought was moderate drinking is actually still deleterious to our health. And so the idea is really thinking about the amount that you're consuming is important. But saying that red wine is bad for you, yeah, if you drink 4 or 5 glasses, even something that could be good in moderation can become bad for you.
Yeah, it's a good point. You know, the word intoxicated has the word toxic in it. Maybe that's what we should stay away from.
That's right. I like that.
We're winding on down. Tell us, I'm curious, when it comes to all age groups, do you have like a top 3 unhealthy foods that we shouldn't be eating at any age? Is there, what's your top 3? Keep out of your kitchen, keep out of your plate from when you go to the restaurants.
Sure. Soda, never. It's complete junk. It's a complete waste of calories. It's just full of garbage. Number 2, anything that has trans fats in it. So you look in the label, if it says trans fats or if it says hydrogenated oil or partially hydrogenated oil, very, very bad for you. And the third thing I would say that I think that I'm not going to say they should stay away from, but I really do believe that red meat should be limited, not avoided, though you can, but I think you really should reduce your consumption of red meat. I would probably say on a weekly basis, no more than 1 or 2 servings a week.
Yeah, well said. Such fascinating info. 30 seconds we have left. Anything you'd like to cover that we didn't share today?
No, I just think that people should understand that eating really is a great way to prevent illness, to reduce your illness symptoms once you have them, and eat your age. I try to give people a blueprint, a plan for each decade. There's a meal plan for every decade. And the Eat Your Age official recipe book will really give you some nice, simple recipes that can be a companion guide to help you kind of eat your way to a good, healthy life.
Fantastic. I want to thank you so much for joining us and sharing such unique information. And I spell that YOUNIQUE, unique, because this book is about you and your age. So I love that. It's a book. It's called Eat Your Age, Feel Younger, Be Happier, Live Longer. And you can get your copy at drianssmith.com. And be sure and also include the companion recipe book he talked about. It contains 150 tasty, affordable, simple, and healthy options for every decade of your life. And you can follow him on Facebook at Dr. Ian K. Smith, on X and Instagram. He's at Dr. Ian Smith. You can follow me on Facebook and X at Dr. David Friedman. On Instagram, I'm at Dr. D. Friedman. If you heard Dr. Smith share something today that somebody you know needs to hear, and of course, whatever decade they're in, send them a link to this podcast. It's available at toyourgoodhealthradio.com and radiomd.com, and peruse our podcast library and share these segments of interest with friends, family, coworkers, and on social media. I always say sharing is caring. Don't keep this information to yourself. It's called being selfish. Don't be that. You can also subscribe to our podcast on Apple, Spotify, and iHeartRadio. More to come. Stay tuned and stay well.